3 rings for the elven kings under the sky, 7 for the dwarf lords in their halls of stone, 9 for mortal men doomed to die, 1 for the dark lord on his dark throne, in the land of Mordor where the shadows lie. 1 ring to rule them all, 1 ring to find them, 1 ring to bring them all and in the darkness find them, in the land of Mordor where the shadows lie. Then I'd just read a little bit. This is at the siege of Minas Tirith, when it looks like the city is going to be lost to the enemy. The drums rolled louder, fires leapt up, great engines crawled across the field, and in the midst was a huge ram, great as a forest tree, 100 feet in length, swinging on mighty chains. Long had it been forging in the dark smithies of Mordor, and its hideous head, founded of black steel, was shaped in the likeness of a ravening wolf. On it spells of ruin lay. Grond, they named it, in memory of the hammer of the underworld of old. Great beasts drew it, orcs surrounded it, and behind walked mountain trolls to wield it. But about the gate, resistance still was stout, and there the knights of Dol Amroth and the hardiest of the garrison stood at bay. Shot and dark fell thick, siege towers crashed or blazed suddenly like torches. All before the walls on either side of the gate, the ground was choked with wreck and with bodies of the slain, yet still driven by a madness more and more came up. Grond crawled on. Upon its housing no fire would catch, and though now and again some great beast called it would go mad and spread, stamping ruin among the orcs innumerable that guarded it. Their bodies were cast aside from its path, and others took their place. Grond crawled on. The drums rolled wildly. Over the hills of slain a hideous shape appeared. A horseman, tall, hooded, cloaked in black. Slowly, trampling the fallen, he rode forth, heeding no longer any dark. He halted and held up a long, pale sword. As he did so, a great fear fell on all, defender and foe alike, and the hands of men drooped to their sides, and no bow sang. For a moment all was still. The drums rolled and rattled. With a vast rush, Grond was hurled forward by huge hands. It reached the gate. It swung. A deep boom rumbled through the city, like thunder running in the clouds. But the doors of iron and posts of steel withstood the stroke. Then the black captain rose in his stirrups and cried aloud in a dreadful voice, speaking in some forgotten tongue, words of power and terror to rend both heart and stone. Thrice he cried. Thrice the great ram boomed. And suddenly, upon the last stroke, the gate of Gondor broke. As if stricken by some blasting spell, it burst asunder. There was a flash of searing lightning, and the doors tumbled and riven fragments to the ground. And then, at the same time, in a later chapter, this is the men of Rohan riding to help defend the city of Minas Tirith. But at that same moment there was a flash, as if light. But at that same moment there was a flash, as if lightning had sprung from the earth beneath the city. For a searing second it stood dazzling far off in black and white, its topmost tower like a glittering needle. And then as the darkness closed again, there came rolling over the fields a great boom. At that sound, the bent shape of the king, Théoden, king of the Rohirrim, sprang suddenly erect. Tall and proud he seemed again, and rising in his stirrups he cried in a loud voice, more clear than that any there had ever heard a mortal man achieve before. Arise, arise, riders of Théoden, fell deeds awake, fire and slaughter. Spear shall be shaken, shield be splintered, a sword day, a red day, ere the sun rises. Ride now, ride now, ride to Gondor. With that he seized a great horn from Guthlaf his banner-bearer, and blew such a blast upon it that it burst asunder. And straightway all the horns in the host were lifted up in music. And the blowing of the horns of Rohan in that hour was like a storm upon the plain and the thunder in the mountains. Ride now, ride now, ride to Gondor. Suddenly the king cried to Snowmane, and the horse sprang away. Beneath him his banner blew in the wind, white horse upon a field of green, but he outpaced it. After him thundered the knights of his house, but he was ever before them. Eomer rode there, the white horse tail on his helm floating in his speed, In the front of the first, Aored roared like a breaker foaming to the shore, but Thaden could not be overtaken. Fey he seemed, or the battle fury of his fathers ran like new fire in his veins. And he was borne up on Snowmen like a god of old, even as Orome the Great in the Battle of the Valar when the world was young. His golden shield was uncovered, and lo, it shone like an image of the sun, and the grass flamed into green about the white feet of his steed. For morning came, morning and a wind from the sea, and the darkness was removed, and the hosts of Mordor wailed, and terror took them, and they fled and died, and the hooves of wrath rode over them. And then all the host of Rohan burst into song, and they sang as they slew, for the joy of battle was on them. And the sound of their singing, that was fair and terrible, came even to the city. I like that piece of writing. Exciting.
Don't read the whole book now.
I write.
This is the funeral of a former, and he died in the second book, or well, in the first book, by orcs defending two hobbits, who were then borne away by orcs. Through Rowan over Fenon Field, where the long grass grows, the west wind comes walking, and about the walls it goes. What news from the west, O wandering wind, do you bring to me tonight? Have you seen Boromir the Tall, by moon or by starlight? I saw him ride over seven streams, over waters wide and gray. I saw him walk in empty lands until he passed away. And through the shadows of the north I saw him then no more. The north wind may have heard the horn of the son of Denethor. O Boromir, from the high hall westward I looked afar. But you came not from the empty lands where no men are. From the mouths of the sea and the south wind flies through the sand and the stone, sand hills and the stone. The wailing of the gulls it bears, and at the gate it moans. What news from the south, O sighing wind, do you bring to me at eve? Where now is Boromir the fair? He tarries, and I grieve. Ask not of me where he doth dwell, so many bones there lie. On the white shores and the dark shores under the stormy sky. So many have passed down the Anduin to find the flowing sea. Ask of the north wind news of them, the north wind send to me. O Boromir, beyond the gates, the seaward road went south. But you came not with wailing gulls from the grave sea's mouth. From the gate of kings the north wind rides and past the roaring falls, and clear and cold about the towers its loud horn calls. What news from the north, O mighty wind, do you bring to me today? What news of Boromir the bold, for he is long away? Beneath Amon Hem I heard his cry. There are many foes he fought. His cloven shield, his broken sword, they drew the waters fraught. His head so proud, his face so fair, his limbs they laid to rest. And Roros, golden Roros fell for him upon to breast. O Boromir, the tower of guard, shall ever northward gaze. To Roros, golden Roros fall until the end of days.
Well, all is not death in the books. It sounds like everything is bad and I'm forgetting my father. I hope they have read the book. Most people have. These little creatures that are about smaller than dwarves, like 3 feet high, up, wider around than they are tall, very fond of food and song, 5 year old days. They have a smoking pipe and their own, and 3 feet. I don't know, I don't want to get away from the talking about the death so much. We have to remember, those of you that don't know the story, the Hobbit sort of started it all, with Bilbo Baggins, who in the Hobbit found the ring. And although we didn't hear about it much, or what it did, in that book, The Lord of the Rings, the trilogy, he gave the Fellowship of the Ring, Two Towers, Return of the King, sort of is the consequence of that discovery. And the Frodo was just a magic ring that led to Bilbo, which was a magic ring that made him disappear. But to his nephew Frodo, who was his heir, the doom sort of come because it was to Frodo that the ring passed on. And the ring was the work of Sauron the Great of Mordor. Was the power of evil in the world at that time. And the whole the whole trilogy revolves around Sauron trying to get the ring back from Frodo, and at the same time trying to rule the world without the ring. We never see Sauron except in one short sequence when Pippin, one of Frodo's relatives, accidentally looks, or is compelled to look into one of the seeing stones and see Sauron, the most horrible thing he's ever seen. But they're help times all the time too. It's a world of elves and of dwarves and of wizards, Gandalf the Grey, and long forgotten kings, as well as you heard orcs, or the goblins, they were called the hobbits, or the spawned off their Tolkien ruined elves or something like that. The evil ones, the trolls, and the servants of Sauron were the nine ringwraiths. And Lord of the head ringwraith, I guess, the person that Richard alluded to when he talked about the horse that came over the top of the hill of bodies at the siege of Gondor. But Richard, do you have anything to read?
Hold on.
Did you read
the
first poem at the very
beginning? Yes.
Did you?
Yeah. Did you? Well, these just sort of get people into the thing.
But you know, here, when we are to speak about those books, we have our choice. We can speak about literary merit or of significance for our time. My own position is this. This book is subversive, unrelated, it's in traditional terms an anti-American activity. Do you want to know why?
Yes.
Well, listen. In most of the tales, somebody finds something. A ring of power. He puts this ring on his finger, and then, of course, he marries King's daughter and lives happily ever after. And gets more shiny castles. I suppose more shiny cars he would get now. And he is the most powerful man on earth. Well, in this story, this is completely different. A ring of power is given, and it must be lost. This power must be destroyed. Why? Because if some evil will get this ring of power, it will destroy not only humanity, but all the earth. Even the oldest being of earth, remember? Will be destroyed. It is quite, yes, probably. It is quite clear with that. Now, as you see, this is going quite contrary to anything what he thought. Moreover, when this ring will be destroyed, many good powers will be destroyed too. Because there are many rings and they held their power from this ring. So, in fact, many things will be more wrong. So this is rather sad. This is one important thing. Then, remember the main hero, Frodo. What he gets for himself from home. He gets no power. He marries no beautiful girl. Absolutely nothing. Well, he's an anti-American here. Let's
see. That's no evidence.
That's
subversive to Christianity.
No. I did not know that.
Oh, I see.
He's an anti-American. Oh. Traditional 19th century. This is what I said. What? That's true.
Well, you're right. One of the criticisms, maybe the angriest, though, is
the story was going off into the sunset, sort of like Jane at the end of her, or, you know, a cowboy riding off into the sunset. I think the person who said that completely missed the point of the book. I mean, they're still trying to find some sort of America inside the book. He does his work and he goes away. He lives alone and I. But even that, Frodo gets nothing for it. Yeah, he's just a loser for all this, you know.
Yes, and those wounds will not be healed.
Will not be healed. And in terms of the good things dying, I mean, the ring, while the ring is there, many, not only evil things in the world, but the three rings for the elven kings under the sky, which is the first line you read on the poem. You know, the rings that keep so much beauty in the world, keep the elves there.
At first, when Mary talks about Christian things, I think that Frodo is obviously a kind of symbol for Christ, because she grows better and better and better. And finally, do you remember that Frodo is about the only man who kills nobody? Frodo kills nobody in the book.
Yeah, but even Frodo couldn't get rid of the ring again.
Yes.
The temptation.
He was a kid.
Well, Tolkien, I mean, I don't do any contextual criticism on this, but I remember reading an article by Tolkien, said that, you know, he had no Christian symbolism in mind, and that this was written for entertainment. And I thought, okay, but you were brought up in the Catholic Church with lots and lots of background, and also had been in the
there's a religious ritual throughout the whole thing. You know, I'd like to know what he had in mind, you know, with all of the ritualism. You know, it's really a fascinating thing. I can't wait until Marty's able to take it on so that he can do some, you know, some interpretation for me. You almost got to see it the way you guys see it. And I don't know whether you see it's there's so much ritual there that can be, at least in my own mind's eye, directly compared to any given fixed liturgy at any given time.
Well, I think it's sort of partly just the heroic ritual, sort of traditional great things that heroes and great people like that do, sort of.
But that's not Christian so much as it is Teutonic.
Let's try this. Tolkien was a bit prejudiced. and every bad character is just a bit darker than the beautiful white thing.
Well, we talked about that in the lift, if you recall.
Yeah. And then again, you
know, we discussed Lord of the Rings already.
The poor man was so long between men alone that he completely could not draw a woman. You know. Exactly like Louis could not do. Only with men.
So what I wanted to say is that, you know, the skillful, the artist, is always around trying to find the handle or something to hang on to that is from the circle to emphasize what he's got to put across. And he lives on that. He's obsessed with what good gimmick have I got that they'll buy? Whether it be the ring or the power or even the stature. It's find my way around. That's what pleases the crowd. And that's, I get what you say, the power to be able to manipulate and put people or put themselves in the limelight.
Are you saying that Tolkien was doing that?
Beg your pardon?
I don't get it. Are you saying that was what Tolkien was doing when he wrote
of
the book?
I mean, whether it be in Christianity or business or social, it's skillful. It's a matter of skill to be able to find out what they want and manipulate that part they want in a sense that whether it be money or prestige or anything, and to bring themselves out. And that's the skill in itself.
Do you think he wrote it for commercial reasons? I wouldn't say that at all.
No. He may have wrote it to get bring out a sense of feeling with people that care. You know, what will it actually get the people, move the people?
Well, he wrote it for the group, that group.
He wrote it for himself.
He wrote it for himself.
He wrote it for himself. He somehow couldn't help but write it.
Yeah.
There was a sheer sort of delight and creative, something got going in him as he studied his ancient languages and the great sagas. And he was swept into his world, and he didn't ask himself, well, shall I write a book about this? He just found himself doing it.
But he wasn't, Norm, wasn't he in the world, though? He spent most of his life hanging out with a group of, I guess, uptight bachelors, you know, who...
Well, a bachelor can be a bachelor without being uptight.
Yeah, but these...
but
these were uptight bachelors, wouldn't you agree?
Sure.
You don't think so?
Well, Charles Williams and Tolkien, and there was Dorothy Sayers. You know, she was, I would say,
she wasn't an uptight bachelor.
Bachelorette.
She wasn't. She was married.
She wasn't in it too much.
She was married.
She was married. Lewis's brother.
And Louis the brother.
Owen Barfield.
Was Lewis's brother married?
Yeah,
he was
married.
And so was Lewis
married.
So Lewis
didn't
get married until
he died. Yeah. Why didn't they operate themselves instead of bachelors? Why didn't they operate themselves as married men or married women? You know, did they have bachelors? Why? Unless bachelors agree, but I don't think anyone.
You know why? Because then they had time to get together and drink their tea and write their books if they've been married. Just think of it. You know,
it wasn't tea.
What else to do?
It wasn't tea. I read about that.
When Dorothy Sayers came.
Well, when Dorothy Sayers came, it was tea.
Carol, she was like that. They were upset.
You bet they were upset. I'm not saying that all bachelors are uptight, but that set of bachelors were. Terrible hangovers.
I think one thing, though, that you have to remember, and that is, I have never read a myth yet that had very flesh and blood people in it. And I don't think that the hobbits are, and I don't think that any of the people they're not incarnated human beings. They're mythical people are, you know,
flexible.
Well, you can blow through them. They're not the kind of thing that you feel like you could actually, you know, lie. I guess I could feel a hobbit, but the rest of them I don't think.
Well, I don't know. I cried.
I cried, sure.
I mean, I could. If like if that were true, and if there was an elf living next door to me, or even if it was, elves living all over, and nobody else saw them.
Yeah.
But I mean, I could feel through a book. I can still feel a lot more. I feel a lot closer to people through that. I mean, to a book than I can to a lot of people out there. I mean, most people I meet, I mean, they're more or less cold. They don't have anything in them that they really want to share.
But you know, I see, you know, everything what he wrote in this book may be important, but the most important is the question of power. You mentioned it. In my opinion, he was fascinated in the ways of power. If you remember some fragments like Voice of Saruman, the sweet voice, so convincing everybody, and everybody could not understand how they cannot go with this great man together. Then again, Ways of Sauron, very interesting if you look closely. The fact itself that he does not permit that his name will be mentioned. In other words, he considers his name holy and powerful, and so on and on. And do you remember some of the songs? Remember song of ants going to Isengard, when they say, "Be Isengard." Maybe you read this. We crush the bone and break the stone. Just read it, and you see how feeling for power.
I wish Ernie Zorg were here because he's got.
You know how he got
Ernie's
thoughts?
I'm gonna go get him.
Well, excuse me, I will still take 3 minutes more because it will be interesting to you. Last year we went to Emerald Park with Ernie and with some younger kids. And we were sitting at the table at Dunkirk. We were speaking about those Narnia books, and I thought that there is a man called Tolkien who writes interesting books too. And Richard told me, but we are Tolkienists. As us.
Wow.
The first question I asked them was, what was the inscription on the door of Khazad Dûm? And I used, of course, language of dwarves. And he asked me, in English or is language of elves? He knows both of them. No. Then I asked him second question. What was the name of new score of, let's call him today, the Strider? And he didn't know the name. You remember, Richard?
Angelus.
What?
Angelus.
Right. Which means?
Lame of the North.
Lame of the West.
West.
And you know, Ernie was around the table listening to us. And then he came to me and thought, what you are speaking of? He thought first that I'm telling Polish history or something.
Heroic too.
And this year when I came here, Ernie began to speak to me with
almost anything else was read in the in the university groups and the high school groups in the last, maybe the last 10 years.
Well, a little less than that.
Yeah,
it sort of followed stuff like Rabbit Run and Catcher in the Rye.
Right. It was just like people wanted to get outside of the problem for a while.
Right.
but the problems there are much bigger. Maybe they're not.
They're
good, evil powers and. In terms of my own teaching, I haven't had any trouble teaching any Anglo-Saxon literature in translation, obviously, since these three books have been read by high school kids. They really understand a lot more about the Anglo-Saxon ideas and point of view and the whole, instead of the American idea of things are going to be all right and okay. There's that idea of the impending doom, and that runs throughout Teutonic literature, or at least it seems in my experience, which isn't very much. It seems to.
That criticism comes up with this escape literature, and you know, it's very unhealthy. And I read some by C.F. Lewis, which he was talking about. There's nothing more escapist than something like a school story, or what we know as a Hardy Boy. Or Amo or the Protector or something like that, where the ordinary people go off and kids find things and they form a gang and they discover the robbers and school is so exciting and they beat up the bad kids and you know, and that's more escapist really than something that you can't possibly get through, like Little Earth. I mean
you have to translate it into your own terms. You can't just
daydream about it. I know lots of people want to go to Middle Earth, and I know they're talking to them. Wish people would stop writing and saying you want to go to Middle Earth. It's gone. Seriously.
Well, maybe he reads now the power
of
this
is the this is the song of the Ents going to war against Eisenberg, who's the imitator of Theron.
The Ents are the spirits of the
trees.
The shepherds. Ents are tree shepherds.
Yeah, tree shepherds.
And they're gone too. Through Isengard, though Isengard be ringed and barred with doors of stone, though Isengard be strong and hard as cold as stone and bare as bone, we go to war to hew the stone and break the door. For bowl and bow are burning now, the furnace roars, we go to war. To land of gloom, with tramp of doom, with roar of drum, we come. To Isengard, with doom we come, with doom we come, with doom we come. So they sang as they marched softly.
I will let you in my Polish English, you know.
Read it in Polish English.
To Isengard. To Isengard be ringed and barred with doors of stone. To Isengard be strong and hard, as cold as stone and strong as bone. We go to war to hew the stone and break the door. For ball and bone are burning snow, the furnace roars, we go to war. To land of gloom, with tramp of doom, with roll of drum, we come. To Isengard, with doom, we come. With doom, we come. With doom, we come.
This is the way to end.
You are intense.
He put it across the way he did. The way
Americans can't read it.
You're the leader now, see? No doubt, because there was no feeling with the way you read it.
Well, I had.
You're the leader.
That's where it counts, too, I think. And why it's alive for those of us who love it is because we've lived it in our marrow. And
that's why I relate. The people may not be so full in flesh, but the feeling is good.
Yeah, but he was very well, he was able to sort of talk better than you were.
Well, that's just a matter of audio, though. You don't read it for enough.
He can still get it himself.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I let it be to himself, but the main thing is how influential he is to the group. I mean, if he's going to be the leader, if you're going to split the camp, he's going to decide where it goes.
What?
Oh, no, we're not
dividing
the village on the culture.
No,
we're not dividing the culture.
This is
a
different
way of reading.
Well, the strange thing of why one reads it with affirmation, and the kind of yes, or is not quite yes, a longing that we live in a way the world is thought of most nowadays is a closed-in world, and a world continually closing in more and more, measured, calculated, computerized, and we are just fodder for the machine. And Tolkien flings wide a whole world where life is larger than life, but there are such things as heroism, and a man being caught up into an enterprise that he cannot but serve, spends himself into that heroic meaning and venture, throwing everything into it. And it's, we sort of thrill to hear of such a world and long to be a part of it, or we are being continually constricted more tightly into our little boxes with the computer giving us.
And remember that Isengard is just town of machines. You remember all the descriptions of machines around?
Does anybody know whether this caught on, say, in England, it, like it has here?
Well, yeah.
I mean, I don't know whether it...
It has, but not the same degree.
So it's kind of... maybe
yeah,
because
an
of its anti-American, that, I mean, go back to your subversive idea, which is kind of interesting.
Oh, I think, well, the main popularity is on the American campus. That's where
it's important. Well, it's a longer popularity than England, though.
Of course, it's the famous
for
the songs,
and
we brought out this copy of that. I
wish
Mark and Paul would sing one of those songs.
Yeah.
Mythology, and you know, they get very wound up in that, but then they might turn around and just say something bad about Tolkien, you know, about the things of Tolkien. And I just said, you know, I mean, I don't see where you can make a different comparison about them, considering that they made you know, they had gods in those, I mean, but they had different types of creatures and an awful lot of Greek mythology and the mythology itself. And I mean, if you put mythology together, it's all pretty much heroism, you know, it's got heroism in it.
The Greeks weren't huge. I don't think the Greeks were that.
No, but I mean,
courage is reserved for the people who have nothing else. I mean, they knew they were going to get beat on the and really probably death on the battlefield. So for the Anglo-Saxons, it was the choice was not whether to live or to die. The choice was how you're going to die. So sing a song. I want to hear a song.
Yeah.
Sing.
The
road goes ever on and on, down from Largo where it began. Now far ahead the road has gone, and I must follow if I can. Pursuing it with living feet, until it joins some water way. Where many paths and errands meet, and wither them. The road goes ever on, and wither them I cannot say.
Oh, yeah.
On the heart the fire is red, beneath the roof there is a bed, but not yet weary are our feet, till round the corner we may meet. On the tree of standing stone, that none has seen but we alone. Tree and flower and leaf and grass, let them pass, hill and water and the sky, pass them by. Home is behind the world ahead, there are many paths red. Shadows to the edge of night until the hills are all light, this world behind and home ahead. We'll wander back to home and bed. Mist and twilight, cloud and shade, the wish of change, the wish of me, fire and land, and meat and bread, and then to bed, then to bed.
Teachers, very, you know, they They don't want kids to do anything but what they, you know, what they want them to. I mean, most teachers, you know, want them to work on their work. I mean, you know, they want.
Well, yeah, I think you should work. I mean, you
know, it's dangerous. Well, I think there is a part of explanation for this. Englishmen are much better educated.
What?
And much better educated. When it comes to Tolkien or Lewis, they did know, well, not on the Norse mythology, Greek mythology, but they went farther on. There is a name in Tolkien which is purely Slavic. In fact, Old French, Radagast.
Radagast.
But they did know so much, they had so great treasure, they could build real castles of gold. Now, who knows here the name Radagast, except for Tolkien. In fact, Radagast was a god.
He was the wizard of the bird.
Yes, but not in Tolkien, you know, in the history.
Yeah, well, Lewis took the name Aslan from Persian, too, so.
I was going with the bell rings, there's coffee and Kool-Aid here, and leftovers from breakfast out there, and there's good coffee and Kool-Aid, so.
Well, let's be rabbits.
Rabbits from the other world.
Let's be rabbits and celebrate.
Yeah, it's strange that Radagast comes out just such a, I mean, he just mentioned twice, and if some people think the wizards are really gods, which there's a theory like that, he seems a pretty feeble one.
No, I thought that in history, in slave history, Radagast was a mighty god.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, and Tolkien took just the name and put the name. But to take a name, he must have known it, you know.
Well, he took up many of his names from Norse mythology, for that in some of the Icelandic prose Eddas, for example, there are whole lists and lists of names.
Yeah.
And I saw one of these, and there's sort of about names of half of the dwarves and things he'd taken from there. And Gandalf, his name, he took from somewhere. Gandalf was half
man.
Yeah,
I've heard that from.
And there are a bunch of Frodo's too.
Do you know that it was the same man, or rather god, who served, who became later Hamlet and Frodo? Yes. It was a Danish man, a king, Danish king, or maybe Danish god. And the history of Hamlet is based on his mythology. And the name of Frodo is based on exactly the same man. I will tell you later if I get some coffee.
Coffee right behind you. I'll bring you.
So, you know, you were singing songs, and he said something about that this is bigger than life. And I the only thing that I ever remembered about my music appreciation class was somebody going on and on about saying that opera was always bigger than life. Maybe we'll make an opera out of this. The operas are always bigger than life. That's the big thing about the definition of opera. Maybe they make an opera out of the Fellowship of the Ring.
Well, now I
don't know.
They're making a movie.
Well, yeah, that way it's not.
Which is going to be terrible.
No, not so bad.
They're playing in the Amsterdam.
You know, I see already, Frodo.
What's so big? Wait till the gun comes.
Boom, boom!
Ever since I heard Norman...
I'm sure they will.
All of one of you is a Sarah. You have a voice.
No,
I don't think
no.
If anybody else interrupted it, I don't even listen to it. You could tell me anything.
There's
you
a
want.
Police on Lake Tahoe called King
Tahoe. He does a good golf, too.
It's a fascinating place. Good
golf.
The theme, you know, on the big signboard is Thy Kingdom Come. And they have got.
Now, somebody else has said anything in there.
They've got this one room.
What are you interrupting
about?
Really?
Yeah, decorate the
Lord. You better tell them. You better hear what's happening to, I think Will should tell you what they're doing with it in Lake Tahoe with a place called King's Castle.
Yeah, they just built it, a brand new place, a gambling casino, among other things, but then it's really a great place that satisfies the need to fantasize, you know. The big sign as you drive up the highway to the castle says, "Thy kingdom come." See?
No.
And that's the beginning of the, you know, of the fantasizing. It's like when you check in, your name changes. You know, for example, for a whole week I was Sir William of Hertzfeld, and Tress was Sir Lady of Lady Theresa of Hertzfeld or something like that. But there's this one room where they have carved characters from Lord of the Rings, you know, all around the room. And this is sort of a special place, you know, for all the little people and the weirdos, you know, that Tolkien describes there. It's a fascinating place. But then, and they've got set in lights, you know, little captions, you know, from the works, etc.
Richard, do you have my photograph of Paolo?
I got it at Chalet, so I get it. Yeah.
What was this?
I tell you, last summer, I went to help a bit people who did organize a summer camp for black kids in the deep part of southern ghetto of Chicago. And there was a room they can put paint, anything they want. So there are only two things painted in this room. On one wall there is a big, powerful black panther.
Okay.
And another, there is a stone. We shall see, Richard will bring it. I was very much interested.
Yeah, we talked about that.
And
too.
You know, my opinion was rather pessimistic, simply, those young people are living in such a pressing world that for them, Sauron is just a figure they can handle.
Yeah.
Of life. And really, it seems, has some other opinion.
Yeah, I've got some other things. I've seen it, you know, and I think it's neutralized by the panther.
Well,
yeah.
I think they're trying to express some sort of before and after mentality.
Oh, that's right. Oh, yeah, right.
Just go around the show. I know.
Have you told the story about it?
Yes, I told it.
Even Sauron was beautiful once.
He was more beautiful than anyone else.
Really? And I just waiting for the Silmarillion.
Yeah.
That we're talking about.
Well, there's one interesting thing for the misappropriation of Tolkien, where people sort of used him for different things. For example, you get these posters with marijuana or something that says, "Frodo smokes pipe weed," you know.
Yeah.
Well, there was a play, I read about a play of the Hobbit, and they changed everything completely round. It didn't bear any resemblance except had some of the same character, and it sort of had the same marijuana type thing in it.
Did you read Lord of the Rings?
No.
Yeah.
That's the Harvard of
America. But you know, I would be very interested if everybody here who ever read this book would tell us which part of it was this most powerful impression on her on here.
Yeah, that
is fun. Which is that? Going around the beginning of this lady with beautiful eyes.
Thank you. I haven't read that. I've read The Hobbit, but my sons have read all the books about three times. I wish they were here.
So maybe everybody going like that. It would be very interesting.
tied in to the Sam character.
Flotsam?
is anchored right into where the sort of things we are and worry about with Sam.
Yeah.
He's down to earth and the sort of man he'd like to have a friend. And is Sam in on this thing too? And you feel, well, it might be for me too.
I reread several times when I got to it. The rest of them, you know, I didn't do it that much. They're okay. Sam and Frodo, they got to the mountain, right? And Frodo put on the ring. As far away as Frodo put on the ring and claimed it for his own, in the very heart of his realm, power in Barad-dûr was shaken, and the power trembled from its foundation to its crown and to its crown. And said, the magnitude, Sauron, the magnitude of his own folly was revealed to him in a blinding flash, and all the devices of his enemies were at last laid bare. Too late. Too late, but all of a sudden, all this whole thing, you know,
all this machinery.
From all his policies and webs and fear and treachery, from all his stratagems and wars, his mind shook free. Throughout his realm, a tremor ran. Slaves quailed, his army halted, and his captain suddenly fearless, the rest and will wavered. For they were forgotten.
Only a couple of times, you know, in his whole life. And they just go suddenly in the forest and there's a tree beard, you know.
What do you mean, Pippin and Mary?
Yeah. Well, I forget, but I like, you know, tree beard, you know.
Oh, yes, he was very fine, very slow, and he never told his true name, because you don't tell your true name to anybody.
Well,
yeah,
the outfit is growing all the time.
Mary, how about you then?
Yeah. Well, I've only read him once, so I can't remember everything. But the thing that stayed with me about it, and why I defend them when people attack them, is that I really love the feeling that, which I believe is part of the kingdom, that you don't, that Sam and Frodo didn't know that other parts of the battle were being covered at certain times, they were not covering the whole field, and that somebody else was doing something at other times. I mean, and it was finally all moving together. And I think this is what really hit me about the book, because I think this is a comfort to anybody who's reading something exciting to know that the guy that's throwing the ball isn't the only one that's doing the interference. You know, he's not the only one that has to do the battle, but that there were battles being waged all over, and they were all coming in like pinchers eventually.
Yes, there is always some kind of connection. Remember when Frodo sat and put his ring and hand on the high seat, and then he felt that somebody told him, "You fool, get it off."
Yeah.
It was Gandalf.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there is this connection.
Yeah, this is that sort of prayer, you know, that the thoughts that Tolkien comes back to those sort of thoughts, but the thoughts of the others were continually on Frodo with Sam and their wandering. And they felt this power.
How about you?
Yeah. I haven't read it for a couple of years, so, but I would say that there are a lot of little things that I like in it besides the big themes of power. And some of the little things that I really enjoy is one of the books I took with me on a pack trip, and while, you know, while I was tramping along, you know, I would read all these things about tracking. that kind of small excitement. And some of the other things that really appealed to me besides the language, I keep running into words that were very Anglo-Saxon, like all the use of the word fell all the way through, which is no longer used in our language. And then and my students started calling each other things like, "You have a fell-faced..." And I mean, it's just a little fun of the language that's used. It's very intriguing to me. And then I went to England and found myself in very small towns and began finding villages with the same names that were in Tolkien, so that's kind of intriguing. So some little tiny discoveries that sort of came after the reading.
Yes, you are right. I remember myself. I was reading first American edition, and they put there is, you remember this place when after meeting Bombadil, they are going farther on, and Agost tries to...
Baron.
Yes.
Yeah.
And see, in the first edition, they are going Widdershine around the tombstone. And in this edition, there is no word Widdershine used at all. And wither shine, do you know what it means?
Oh.
Wither shine. When you go in direction, not in direction as the sun goes, but in contrary. This is wither shine. And you know. Well,
I don't know, Tad. But like I said, I'm kind of waiting for Marty to read it. Yeah. Because I got the book 2 years ago for Christmas. It was given, you know, the whole set. It was given to me by a law student, University of California. And
reading something good.
And at first I didn't pay any attention to him. But then, you know, like most folks who hang around campuses and things like this, I got interested, and so I read it. But I'm afraid I read Tolkien pretty much the way I listen to jokes and the way I tell them. I always see profound sociological implications in them. And I suppose, you know, that the character Sam, I was just mentioning to Mary, to me, Sam is a real soul brother because he kind of goes through the changes which are not peculiar to the experiences of most kids that I talk to, and most kids that I observe. I've been doing comparative analysis, and then I'm finished, of what's happening in Tolkien's thing and what's happening on Sesame Street, for example. You know, and the, you know, the almost mad obsession to create something that's going to constitute some relief. beyond that, I don't think that any single episode, I did recoil, as you already know, at the insistence upon the play on the evils of blackness. Betsy said last night, when Betsy was sitting next to me last night while Norm was preaching, and she says, "Now don't get uptight now."
Norman just said, "What's the black?"
There's this awful black backdrop.
That's right. I thought it was.
I did actually.
Yeah.
I say dark, like driving on the wrong side of the road. And the other word.
There is a reading of the faces of the characters, though, when the black gate closes.
Yeah. The black riders.
Yeah, and the black riders, and, you know, and it's, I mean, it's, you know, I think it's a valuable piece to get inside of yourself and to fantasize. I gotta listen to my son read it yet.
This way, I remember when some of them go out and see most of the face darker.
That's
but
right.
Between them, some of them were more beautiful, you know, more white. So you could see that they are better. You remember, there is a small fragment when they are going south of Gondor, looking.
Now, this is one of the many instances where, you know, where what you've described, I think, comes through. It's not entirely all black.
And of course, you remember that this is the same kind with Polish people, because when some teacher gives to students something to write about, let's say, write about elephants. Well, if they will be different nations, a Pole will write elephants and Polish problems.
Yeah.
And of course,
yeah. But if, you know, a summary statement, you know, for Tolkien and his work, I think that he has very few parallels in this particular arena. I think he's probably one of the most excitable writers around,
yeah.
And his imagination runs away with him. You know, I enjoyed reading the book.
Me too. In fact, you know, when I did read it first time, I had hay fever, and I was sneezing and whipping all the time, and 3 days and 2 nights, I read this book, you know. Next one.
I'm using this as a prelude. I have read none of the books,
you
but
will.
I will.
You
and
can.
I think that this discussion has stimulated me. It has greatly. And I know I have a list about this long when I come home from holding the books that I have to read before next year.
Well, before you say, there's a Grinch upstairs. He wants to say something about that.
Tolkien?
You know, we want to know what was the most interesting little fragment of the book you liked best of Tolkien's Lord of the Rings.
I didn't know there was a fragment I liked. I mean, there was something, I think I liked the book because of the type of mood. It was able to create mood tremendously, you know, moving mood. You could just feel the ominous of, you know, Mordor and the clouds coming over. I think it was a general mood created by the whole book that really impressed me more than any particular fragment of it.
I see. How about you?
Yeah.
You want to two most important men now, say, you.
Well, I don't know. I've got three main characters I like best in the book. I mean, I put them on the highlight. One of them may have been, like, one of them was hated somewhat by most people. I suppose they felt sorry for. But I'll start with the two most liked. Gandalf and Sam I liked the best because, well, they were the same as all. I mean, Gandalf was the same as all. He could be tempted with the ring. And when Frodo offered the ring to Gandalf, backed down real fast. He was afraid that if he took the ring, he would become just like Saruman, only worse. And I, you know, I felt that, he seemed somewhat like maybe a noble knight that might be, might have been offered a, magic, some type of magic wand or something, or, a wizard, somewhat like King Arthur's court and the wizard and King Arthur's court. Merlin. Anyways, if like Merlin might have been, like Merlin had been, been tempted. He didn't know Gandalf, but he was in some parts. But Gandalf was more or less, more majestic. And then Sam was tempted in the Blackland, and he was saying, all people will come to me, and flock to the call, everyone, Sam the Great, Sam why, And then the last character I liked, and I think I liked him probably the best, was Gollum. And
who?
Gollum. Two poems I've got here that I like. When he talked to himself, when he talked about this, the cold our lands, they bites our hands, they gnaws our feet, the rocks and stones are like old bones, all bare of meat. But stream and pool is wet and cool, so nice for feet, and now we wish. And now, you may remember this next poem. It was in the first book, in The Hobbit. And he put it to Bilbo. And he says, aha, what does we wish, he said, looking sidelong at the hobbits. We'll tell you, he croaked. He guessed it long ago, Baggins guessed it. A glint came into his eyes, and Sam, catching the gleam in the darkness, thought it far from pleasant. Alive without breath, as cold as death, never thirsty, never drinking, clad in mail, never clinking, drowns on dry land, thinks an island is a mountain, thinks a fountain is a puff of air, so sleek, so fair. What a joy to meet, we only wish to catch a fish, so do she sweet. And his moods here, I can't say he was really bad. I never thought him really as bad. More or less, I felt that he was sort of like, he was a pawn in a sense, because both people used him. Sauron used him to get the ring, and Gandalf, in a way, used him. He knew he was going to be for good or worse.
Yeah, well, he's also what Bilbo or Frodo would have said.
Yeah, right, yeah. But I mean, he was a symbol to them, I suppose. They took the ring.
But he was originally a sort of hobbit.
Yeah.
Hundreds of years ago. And there were points where salvation was possible.
Yeah. Oh, well,
this is Tolkien's favorite part. His favorite part was right when Sam and Frodo were on the stairs of Sirithundar. And Gollum comes upon them and they're both asleep. And he says, if anyone had seen him sitting there, he would have seen it. A very old, old hobbit. Reaching out, wanting to touch, and just this one second there was salvation. And then it's truly human. Sam wakes up.
Hey,
how are you?
Yeah, very polite. A pretty good actor.
To put some teeth in. Yeah, I found
the place you're talking about. Do you want me to read it?
Yeah, why don't you read it?
Gollum looked at them. A strange expression passed over his lean, hungry face. Gleam faded from his eyes, and they went dim and grey, old and tired. A spasm of pain seemed to twist him, and he turned away, peering back upwards toward the path, shaking his head as if engaged in some interior debate. Then he came back, and slowly putting out his trembling hand, very cautiously he touched Frodo's knee, almost the touch of a caress. For a fleeting moment, if one of the sleepers had seen him, they would have thought that they beheld an old, weary hobbit, shrunken by the years that had carried him far beyond his time, beyond friends and kin, and the fields and streams of youth, an old, starved, pitiable thing. But at that touch, Frodo stirred and cried out softly in his sleep, and immediately Sam was wide awake. The first thing he saw was Gollum's coin at his master as he thought. Hey, you, he said roughly. What are you up to? Nothing, nothing, said Gollum softly. Nice, master. I dare say, Sam, but where have you been to sneaking off and sneaking back the old villain? Gollum withdrew himself and a green glint flickered under his heavy eyes.
That was Tolkien's favorite.
Oh, yeah, it was one of my favorite places where he was. The human, the salvation.
Well, the last man, what is yours?
Yeah.
Well, it isn't my favorite. I don't know whether I have a favorite part, but this is the part I like, and it's sort of in a different vein from most of them. This is when after they've defeated Saruman's forces at Helm's Deep, they go up to Isengard, and they just coming through the gate. Just, where is it? Oh, yes. There they saw close aside from a great rubble heap, and suddenly they were aware of two small figures lying on it at their ease, grey-clad, hardly to be seen among the stones. There were bottles and bowls and platters laid beside them, as they had just eaten well and now rested from their labour. One seemed asleep, the other with crossed legs and arms behind his head, leaned back against a broken rock, and from his mouth long whisked the little rings of thin blue smoke. Welcome, my lord, to Isengard, he said. We are the door wardens. Moriah Doctor and Saradoc is my name, and my companion, who alas is overcome with weariness, here he gave the other a dig with his foot. He is the Peregrine, son of Paladin, of the House of Soup. Far in the north is our home. The Lord Saruman is within, but at the moment he is closeted as one worm tongue. Or doubtless he would be here to welcome such.
Keep reading that. Just that next sentence.
Huh?
Just keep reading there where
it's
just that next paragraph.
Doubtless he would, laughed Gandalf. And was it Saruman that ordered you to guard him down his door and watch for the arrival of guests? When your attention could be spared from the plate and bottle.
The old man escaped, isn't it?
Yeah, no, but the matter escaped him, answered Merry gravely. He has been much occupied. Our orders came from Freebeard, who has taken the management of Isengard. He commanded me to welcome the Lord as well as fitting one. Oh, thanks, Ben Gimli. And what about your companions? What about Legolas and me, you rascal? You woolly-footed and wolf-hated truant? A fine hunt you've led us. 200 leagues through fen and forest, battle and death to rescue you, and here we find you feasting and idling, and smoking. Where do you come by the weed, you villain? I am so torn between rage and joy that if I do not burst, it will be a marvel.
And what do the hobbits do then? They cook dinner for the Yarador and and they have dinner again.
But I suppose you know all those descriptions of plenty of food and drink would be not possible to be written here with obsession about other ways.
Well, wasn't that time, you know, when he says about pipe weed from home, you know, and then at the end of the book it says York, you know, about they had taken over. Wouldn't that be then, couldn't that have been about the time when they had taken over? Some had taken over and started sending pipe weed out?
Well, yeah. Lotho had been sending it out before that.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, Oh, yeah.
By the way, I tell you something. 2 years ago, I went to the tidings here. And I went quite far and I saw wind blowing. The dead sound of a dead man. And everything around was dead. I take a picture of it, and I get tired. The land of Mordor, where the shadows lie. It was late after
another eloquent description of the third book,
where
you have
gone,
and you have
to
be
cooling
around
the
green and rock.
Oh, yeah.
But it's really, I think it's really good how sort of, if ever you're getting too overwhelmed by all the tragedy, you know, there's a little cheery hobbit saying some chirpy little comment, you know. And this is one good way sort of leads into the story, because maybe it would be a little bit unreal, perhaps, if you immediately jumped into all the sort of great battles and things like that. But he starts you off with somebody's birthday, and the hobbits in the Shire, and then through, you know, he has sort of hobbits going everywhere to sort of tie it in more with you know, the world we know.
Yeah,
what you're saying is true. Like when Merry wakes up after Aragorn heals her, what does he say for us? Where's my pipe?
This is the same thing I saw in real life, you know, something like that. Some people were in coal mines and stone was falling all around them, so they were isolated. It took about 24 hours to get to them. But there was a long pipe and they could say whatever they wanted. And first thing they told us was, we'll be paid for this time we and then half an hour later they called again. Will our pay will be normal or for overtime?
So you see, that's not quite the same.
But it's the same way, because I mean, you know, food and there, you know, you never really notice money for them, you know, time, you know. But more or less food, and, you know, they never really signify money. Yeah, I know, but I mean, otherwise, you know, and food and money, you know, they're both things, you know, the hobbits like food. You know, they really enjoy food. You know, guys, you know, humans like, you know, enjoy money.
You know, what you think, you know, what you think about this mysterious silver mithril? What mithril means?
Well,
this is very interesting.
The Elvish means grey fire.
Well,
I think
I'm asking what means to you, because mithril, in my opinion, has some significance. You know, dwarves were always digging for mithril. And when they found it, they went to there to do. And there were monsters there.
Yeah.
Now, what it means to you?
It's, you know, all these temptations.
It's not
that. Oh, no, it's not. I mean, it's not that, just that, I mean, although, well.
Jerome created a lot of desire, and it's just something that's so... There's always more than you yet dreamt of. This stretch of living life.
It's
something that you know, like the dwarves, that Balin must have known what happened when he went back in. Because he had died and told him, you know. The one person that had been inside Mordor and saw the evil. And yet they would go back there just for this beautiful, this thing that would take them again to their doom. And they found the found to each other, you know, before they, and then they were all right.
You know,
so,
could not it mean that mithril means money in general?
Money.
Money.
What's the only sort of thing?
You know,
one reason they went back to Moriah too was it was sort of their old home.
Yeah.
I mean, that all these people have the yearnings to get back home, you know, all the elves. Once they see the sea, they just yearn to go back over the sea, and the elves, you know, the dwarf yearn to go to the mountains.
Yeah. That's true, they felt like they were just iron ones.
We're all exiled.
You know, you know, Gandalf said when he plunged into the hole, you know, in Borog, that there were things down there that even, you know, Sauron couldn't have guessed when, you know, were alive, you know, they were down there. And if Sauron had earth, you know, if Sauron had, you know, found them, or if he had, you know, let them loose on the earth, you know, on Middle Earth, I just wonder if maybe the whole, you know, the whole event of the war would have changed.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, but I don't think Sauron could have controlled.
Well, even so, I mean, they would have, you know, they may have taken over themselves.
Yeah, because, I mean, the Balrog, I don't know whether he could have controlled the Balrog too well either. Because now the Balrog was created by Morgoth, who was the old ancient enemy, who was Sauron's master. Sauron was just a servant of him, so I don't know whether he could have controlled the Balrog.
Well, he was called the Flame of Uruk, too.
Yeah,
I don't know. You know, the evil things are sort of, they must hate themselves too. Because you notice that like old man Willow, you know, he hates everything and moves on four legs, but he's a mighty singer of songs, so why doesn't he go and, you know,
he's rotten to the core.
He's rotten to the core, right? There's nothing to gnaw the earth underneath the mountains there.
So,
I mean, there.
So, I will ask you two questions. You answer whichever you will. One is, why nobody did mention Harry? Why? And second question is, why Ring has no power whatever over Tom Bombadil.
Oh, isn't he older than the ring?
Is this enough? Is that enough?
Well, I think he's older and he's got more power than the ring. I maybe because he doesn't.
Thank you very much.
Maybe because he doesn't care for the rings, but they don't have power over him.
I don't think he sort of. It's on a different level from where he lives. He just lives sort of simply with the earth. And
but who is Tom Bombadil? Who is Tom
Bombadil?
He is.
Right? Well, but who is?
It sounds like his father, you know, like Richard says, father of the earth, like he's, you know, he in a way has somewhat rule over the earth. But he never
really is his master. The trees and the animals belong to himself.
I mean, he's not evil. He never really was evil. So he's made, you know, he never leaves his own land. So he never finds out, you know, the only way, like, you know, he doesn't go into evil. The way, you know, Son of Man did, or, you know, other people, he really didn't have power, in a sense.
Oh yeah.
I mean, he didn't have the power like Gandalf could have.
So his power is in the earth.
That's why what he was saying. He would be last to go if he must ever get his power back.
So you would say that he's, well, in many mythologies there is mother elf. Would some Bombadil with that will be kind of father elf, something like that? Elf power of ancient days, which is still very much with us. And now how about elf? Why nobody mentioned those beautiful elves?
We just mentioned elves once, but
well, just
doesn't enough.
How so?
Well, elves are kind of mysterious, you know. Tolkien doesn't say, doesn't give too many descriptions of elves. They're kind of, you know, strange and apart from everybody else. So I don't know, in a class or the elves, because, you know, they leave in the end, you know.
That's another one of my favorite parts, is the Lothlorien, the forest. Mm-hmm. I think that connects to that whole description of when they're there, you know. And it's just like that hardly even belongs. Yeah, I mean, it's in the books, but it's an entirely different thing. You know? An entirely different thing. Even when they look into that little pool, you know, and saw the Sauron's eye, you know, even then, that was probably the only place they could have done that, and not been just, you know, drawn in immediately. You know, it was just such a perfectly strong and enchanted place. You know?
Yeah. And I was especially interested in this power of lady. Everybody outside was very much afraid of her,
mm-hmm.
because she was not bad, not good, but
mm-hmm.
you remember?
Yeah.
I think elves kind of put it themselves, with they're just pausing to go over the west, which seems to say to me that they aren't from Middle Earth to begin with.
Well, they came from the east.
Yeah.
Before the first day.
They're not part of the
They're pausing until it's canceled.